Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, European and American Catholic bishops head for Bethlehem amidst the continuing violence in the Gaza Strip. The president of Caritas Internationalis appeals for an immediate ceasefire there to allow aid workers to care for the injured and dying. And Pope Benedict holds his first general audience of the new year, continuing his reflections on the teaching of the Apostle Paul. Church leaders from across Europe and North America are travelling to Bethlehem this week for a meeting aimed at supporting the dwindling Christian churches in the Holy Land. The annual pilgrimage by bishops and representatives of relief organisations working in the Holy Land will take place from January the 9th to the 13th and is focused on praying together with local Christians in parishes across the region. The coordination group of bishops' conferences in support of the Church in the Holy Land, as it's known, was set up in Jerusalem at the request of the Holy See in October 1998 and is aimed at encouraging pilgrimages to the land where Christ was born, as well as keeping up the political pressure abroad to help bring much-needed peace and stability to the region. This year, of course, the church leaders are travelling to Bethlehem as the conflict in Gaza continues to claim hundreds of victims. On Tuesday, at least 40 people were believed to have died when an Israeli airstrike hit a United Nations-run school in a refugee camp in Gaza. Israel began its aerial bombardments on December the 27th, followed by a ground offensive in the Gaza Strip in an effort to stop Palestinian rocket attacks into nearby Israeli towns and villages.
This is clearly the most traumatic I've experienced.
As he prepared to lead the pilgrimage of church leaders to the Holy Land, the Archbishop of Liverpool and Vice President of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, Patrick Kelly, issued a statement saying he's deeply concerned about the conflict and the plight of innocent people in Gaza. While he notes the conflict has very deep roots, he stresses the priority right now must be an immediate end to the violence. Just before his departure for Bethlehem, I talked to Archbishop Kelly about this year's pilgrimage and about his concerns for the deteriorating situation in the Gaza Strip. You're heading off again to the Holy Land as the conflict there in Gaza continues to unfold. It's a very dramatic backdrop this time, isn't it, for the visit to the Holy Land?
It is indeed. And oddly, though, not the first time. This is clearly the most traumatic I've experienced. Once before we were there when the Intifada was at its height, and on one occasion we were close enough to hear a bomb exploding in Jerusalem. But I think the very fact that the situation is so disturbing at this moment, it's doubly important that from other parts of the world, some of us come to accompany our sisters and brothers in the Holy Land.
There will be those who say it's a rather foolish thing to do in the face of such violence. I mean, do you fear at all for the safety of the church leaders going to be there?
I don't think so. I mean, it has always been pointed out that in all the years of trouble and the anxieties, while there's been inconvenience and sometimes long delays, in fact, a pilgrim has never suffered through any of these events. And I think also that to be resolved to say, if we do nothing else, if our journeys are curtailed, if we're there to pray together, that is, in a sense, the ultimate testimony we give. I often think that the story, if you like, of our Lord himself, which reached its climax in Jerusalem, was in the end he abandoned himself to what somebody described as an apparently impotent providence. He just remained patient, faithful, forgiving to the end. And I think that testimony has got to live on and be spoken. And sometimes when you can do little, that's the testimony which shines through.
There is, of course, a flurry of political and diplomatic activity going on to try and negotiate another ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinians. Do you think your presence there, or do you think religious leaders can play any part at all in trying to push for the end of this violence?
I think we've got to be very honest about what we can and cannot do. I think it is important to know that the religious leaders can always give a word which is about being able to rise above violence. And I suppose in the end, one word which is going to be central, as it is in all conflicts, is that essential word, forgiveness. I often think when I reflect on stories much nearer home, that one of the turning points in the story of Ireland was when that amazing man, Gordon Wilson, when a bomb had brought down a wall which was crushing his daughter to death, he said, as I held her hand and she said, "Daddy, I love you," he said, "at that moment, I forgave those who did it." That was one of the turning points. And I think in that sense, it's not so much by trying to have a political voice or to exercise power, but it's by creating a different sort of context that religious leaders have their part to play.
You yourself have been into Gaza with the Holy Land coordination team and met with the only parish priest there, Catholic parish priest, Father Manuel Moussalam. Is there anything more that the churches can do to try and support the population there?
I think one of the very important reasons why it's vital we go ahead with this year's coordination is precisely to be briefed by those so much closer to these events than we are here in England and other parts of Europe and the United States and Canada. And therefore, I think we must come, as always, those who I always say, not that we return home wise, but we return home less foolish. And I think we've got to be ready for what one might call a bit of frustration. And curiously, on a visit 2 years ago, I heard it from, if you like, both parties to the terrible agony of the land when somebody said, of course, if you consult with two Jews, you'll have three opinions, and somebody said, if you consult with two Arabs, you'll have three opinions. Therefore, I do think listening and trying to be a voice which is less foolish is always a great service to others.
This year, for the first time, you're going to be staying in Bethlehem, which is a change of venue. Last couple of years, you've been in Jerusalem. What is the purpose of this?
Well, again, although last year's were in Jerusalem, over the years, we've tried to change our focus. We've tried to make sure, for example, the Galilee on one occasion, another occasion Jordan. So again, it's to get a different feel, to hear different voices, though clearly and very often people forget how close Bethlehem and Jerusalem are to each other. Clearly there'll be a focus on both cities, and from the voices we hear there, clearly always reaching out to Gaza.
And yet significantly this year in Bethlehem, you'll be behind the Israeli security barrier. That gives a particular focus, doesn't it, to the meetings there?
It does indeed. But again, I think our focus there is above all going to be, as always, with the parishes. We're hoping on Sunday to celebrate Mass in different parishes, not least in the Bethlehem area. We're going to spend some time with the students of Bethlehem University, with which my own city, Liverpool, has built ever stronger links because some of the students were here earlier in 2008, as part of our Year of Culture, a big celebration for young people. And one of the great joys was welcoming Bethlehem University students. So all that will be part of it as well.
You're talking about visiting the various parishes there. Can you give us an idea of perhaps some of the other highlights of this visit?
I think it is going to be good that we're going to be able to join the seminarians and celebrate Mass with them, to pray with them. I think it's almost certain that there will be very few meetings with significant political leaders, but I suspect there will be meetings with, for example, local mayors who will describe what the situation is for them. And as always, through people like Caritas Jerusalem, we'll be briefed on the whole situation affecting so many people and the poverty which touches so many lives.
There is, of course, a new Catholic patriarch there, Latin patriarch in Jerusalem, Monsignor Fouad Toile. What is your message to him as he faces, again, this very difficult and dramatic situation?
I think the message we will be giving to the patriarch is we are resolved to continue to accompany you as we accompanied Patriarch Michel Sabah. I've met Archbishop Fouad Toile several times in recent years, most recently at the Synod, when I deliberately, as part of the Synod, had a celebration for all those with any association at all with the Middle East, and it was a most blessed evening at the English College, and one of those there was the Patriarch. I know him well. It will be good to be with him, and I hope all of those we meet will feel anything we can say or do, and thanks, for example, to your work at Vatican Radio, we're able to reach out to so many people and to, I suppose, echo the voice of Pope Benedict, whose words at the Angelus on Sunday were so utterly, wonderfully right.
In these first days of the new year, as the Church celebrates the birth of the Saviour, let us pray that the peace proclaimed by the angels at Bethlehem will take ever deeper root in human hearts, banish all discord and violence, and inspire the human family to live in harmony and solidarity.
And yet the situation in the Holy Land there has been going on for so long. For many people, it's almost fallen off the political agenda, if you like. What else are you trying to do back home in England and indeed in the other countries where the bishops are coming from to keep this as a priority, trying to find peace in the country there?
I think we always, on our return home after these visits, seek every opportunity, if we're asked to give interviews, to speak with others, that we will always do. And this morning on our own radio, BBC Radio 4, there was a very interesting interview. John Sargent, I think it was, speaking to, or Michael Simpson, one of the two reporters, speaking to Tony Blair. I think it was one of the best interviews I've ever heard Tony Blair give. It was very hard-headed, very clear, very demanding. And running through it, there was that glimmer of hope. And I've always said that somebody who grew up throughout the whole of the story of Ireland, I at times felt that would never change. I think many of us, even days before it came down, thought the Berlin Wall was there forever. And yet, things do change. And I always think then when I use the word change of the late Cardinal Hume, who always said, if I say things must change, it means I must change. If we go to the Holy Land, you've got to go as a pilgrim. And pilgrims are always those who say, if I must change, I will change.
This year, Pope Benedict is also hoping to make a visit to the Holy Land. Does this in any way alter the aims of your visit or perhaps the work that you'll be doing there?
I suspect we'll probably be briefed about what the plans are looking like for the possibility of a visit of the Holy Father. And clearly, I would suspect that some of the briefing which the nuncio and others will obviously give in to the Holy Father will in part be enriched by the discussions we've had over the years. I'm sure that'll be part of the picture. And clearly, in many ways, this idea of accompanying the churches of the Holy Land, the surest sign of that accompanying by the whole of the Roman Catholic Church will be a visit to the Holy Father himself. It's a blessing, I believe, we must pray for and long for.
Significantly, it's also the 40th anniversary of the first visit by a pope there, by Pope Paul VI, isn't it?
It is indeed, and I think in many ways that was a blessing. I was in Rome at that time, and I remember the night the Holy Father returned to Rome. I remember lining the streets with the tens of thousands of others. I remember him coming to his window and saying, of all things, I this morning have the incredible joy of embracing the Patriarch Athanagoras. And again, there were hopes raised then, which we must never lose sight of. There are journeys towards reconciliation and peace, and the reconciliation, which we always said has got to first of all begin with within the household of God, the reconciliation among the disciples of the Lord is one which we must continually address. And one feature of the visit this time is we're going to have a meeting with, I think it is 60 Lutheran bishops who are going to be in the Holy Land at the same time. Again, a sign of reconciliation has many aspects, and all of them have got to be pursued with rigour and with confidence.
Thanks there to Archbishop Patrick Kelly, Archbishop of Liverpool and Vice President of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. And I'll be joining him and the other church leaders to report on this annual pilgrimage beginning on Friday, so you'll be able to follow details of their meetings with local communities and church leaders throughout the coming week on our news and feature programmes. Meanwhile, the president of Caritas Internationalis, the Global Catholic Confederation of Aid and Development Organizations, has issued a statement making an urgent appeal for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza in order to get vital medical supplies through to the sick and injured civilians there. Honduran Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez stresses the war cannot be justified by either Israel or Hamas and says it's morally repugnant to argue over proportionality when dozens of innocent children are being killed. The statement also calls for urgent action from the US, Europe and the international community at large to press for a ceasefire and create conditions for the aid agencies to be able to care for the sick and dying. Caritas works in Gaza through local partners and religious organisations, including the British-based Islamic Relief Charity, to provide supplies and services to those most in need. With the aerial bombardments and ground attacks continuing, most aid workers are now unable to reach large sections of the population. Before the air attacks started at the end of December, the Gaza Strip was already facing a humanitarian crisis with lack of food and other basic necessities due to the 18-month-long Israeli blockade. Caritas spokesman Patrick Nicholson told me the news from local aid workers in Gaza is becoming increasingly desperate, with doctors and hospitals simply unable to cope with the growing numbers of sick and injured.
Well, our local Caritas in Jerusalem works in Gaza through a series of medical clinics and centres and a mobile clinic. So they've been in close contact with their staff. And what their staff in Gaza are saying is that there's a medical crisis, a humanitarian crisis developing there, where there are too many wounded and injured because of the Israeli bombing, and there are not enough doctors, nurses, hospital beds to treat all the wounded. And because it's so difficult to move around, Because of the danger of being hit by an Israeli attack, doctors can't get to hospitals, they can't get to people's homes to treat the wounded, so we're seeing innocent civilians dying during this crisis. And what we really would like to see is a ceasefire, so our staff can and other doctors can get to the people who need the help the most.
What kind of figures do you have at the moment on the death toll and also those injured and in need of medical aid?
Well, the death toll is going up all the time. It's over 500 now, close to 600 Palestinians killed. I think there's about four Israelis killed in southern Israel. In terms of wounded, we're looking at 2,500. And that reflects really with the number of hospital beds in Gaza, which is just 2,000. So there's obviously a surplus of people who are critically wounded. These are really severe injuries caused by aerial bombardment and ground attacks, and they really do need urgent medical assistance.
This is a very strong-worded statement, isn't it? Aimed at both Israeli and Hamas leaders, urging them to stop the violence immediately.
Absolutely. Our president, Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez, really feel strongly that the arguments about proportionality and blame are morally repugnant when you've got innocent children being killed. You cannot argue that this is a proportional attack, and you cannot on either side, and both sides really need to come to their senses and seek peace negotiations and dialogue to bring an end to this humanitarian crisis.
Now, of course, the latest fighting comes on the heels of an 18-month-long Israeli blockade of Gaza, which had already precipitated a humanitarian crisis, hadn't it?
The humanitarian crisis in Gaza has been growing for some time, exactly over the last 18 months. 80% of the population rely on aid. And so now, with the blockade worsening, we're seeing those people not receiving any food, there's a real shortage of money, people can't buy anything, and there's a shortage of medicine and electricity. It's very hard for us to call our staff in Gaza because the phones don't work and because there's no electricity. So we're really seeing an intensification of a humanitarian crisis for 1.5 million people.
So, in fact, even if the bombardment stopped immediately, it would take a significant amount of time before adequate food and medical supplies get through to those who need it most urgently.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are looking at obviously a huge rebuilding effort and reconstruction effort in Gaza anyway. I mean, the problem we've got with, we can get things across the border, but the problem is distributing them whilst we're in Gaza, because you just cannot reach people because of the bombardment, which is why it has to stop.
There's obviously going to be a number of other longer-term effects of this bombardment, not least of which I imagine is the trauma, particularly on the children who are witnessing the most extraordinary atrocities throughout these attacks.
Yes, I think that's right. I think the trauma of living through this, only the 18-month siege, but also this bombardment will be intense. We do have some counselling programs run by our American member Catholic Relief Services in Gaza. So we don't know yet, but they've been working in the past, and there are there will be a lot of trauma to deal with.
You say you're working with other partners there on the ground. Is it easy to work together with other local organisations throughout this very difficult period?
We do a lot of work with the parish in Gaza through the parish priest there, Father Manuel, and we also work through other church bodies, and our members work through our UK member, CAFOD, works through Islamic Relief, and they're able to operate quite well. So it is possible to work with other partners and for us to provide Palestinians the aid that they need.
This statement from the Caritas president, Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez, comes on the heels of Pope Benedict's very strong appeal just a few days ago to stop the fighting there in Gaza. Do you think these kind of appeals have any effect at all on the current situation?
I think they do. I think we're seeing a huge amount of diplomatic activity, both within the Holy Land and at the United Nations in New York. And there's, in the past, this pressure does work. So hopefully it can be borne to bear on both Hamas and Israel. They can no longer continue. I think the Pope's message was, a very powerful statement, and our Cardinals, Cardinal Rodriguez's message yesterday was also, clearly said that the situation is morally repugnant while children are dying. So we're seeing an intensification of diplomacy. I mean, you could speculate about the timing of the attack, that it came over the Christmas holiday season when diplomats and are away, you can see there was a window there, but now I think people are coming back to work, and we're seeing a ratcheting up of pressure on both sides, really, to step away from these attacks.
In the meantime, what can ordinary people, what can Christians do, perhaps, to try and support people there in Gaza in this very difficult situation?
Well, we'll be launching an appeal to continue providing medicine and food aid to the people of Gaza that we work through. I mean, our medical clinics treat 1,500 people each a day, six of them. So it is possible to get things through, and so you can support Caritas, or you support other aid agencies, and also talk to your governments, talk to your politicians, and impress upon them the need for peace in the Holy Land.
Thanks there to Patrick Nicholson, spokesman for Caritas Internationalis, the global confederation of Catholic aid and development organisations. And if you want to find out more about their work in Gaza, you can look them up on the internet at www.caritas.org. We'll be right back. At his first general audience of the new year, Pope Benedict continued his catechesis on the teaching of St. Paul the Apostle, as he's been developing throughout this Pauline year. This week he focused on the meaning of true worship, as highlighted in St. Paul's letter to the Romans. My colleague Lydia O'Kane has all the details.
Over the Christmas season, Pope Benedict has had a hectic schedule, presiding over many of the traditional events, which included lengthy speeches and homilies. So it's no wonder that at Wednesday's general audience, he found himself saying to those gathered that he was losing his voice, and joked, "I hope you can follow me." In this first audience of the new year, the Holy Father wished everyone all the very best for the coming months, and added, "May our minds and hearts be opened ever more fully to Christ." It may have been the start of a new year, but the Pope returned to a familiar theme, that of the figure of St. Paul.
Today, we turn to the meaning of true worship, as highlighted in Paul's letter to the Romans. In uniting us to himself, Christ, a temple not made with human hands, has made us a living sacrifice. Paul thus exhorts us to offer our own bodies, meaning our entire selves, as a spiritual worship, not in the abstract, but in our concrete daily life. At the same time, this true worship does not come about merely through human effort. Rather, through baptism, we have become one in Jesus Christ, who took upon himself our human nature and has thus assumed us into himself.
Pope Benedict continued by saying that only Jesus has the power to unite all people. Therefore, he said, the missionary activity of the Church is to construct a universal one.
Thus, the goal of the Church's missionary activity is to call everyone into this cosmic liturgy in which the world becomes the glory of God, a pleasing sacrifice sanctified by the Holy Spirit.
At the conclusion of the audience, Pope Benedict made sure he had enough voice left to greet all the English-speaking pilgrims and invoke his apostolic blessing on all those present.
I am pleased to greet all the English-speaking pilgrims and visit present to this audience, including the groups from Finland and the United States of America. Upon you and your families, I will invoke God's blessings of joy and peace throughout the new year.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane reporting on Pope Benedict's catechesis at his weekly general audience on Wednesday. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.